KYW News Radio Original Podcasts. From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly, healing through heritage with archives, art, storytelling, and community engagement. Diaspora DNA Center is an organization in Philadelphia that unlocks history from behind the glass and brings it to the community. It was founded by Monica O. Montgomery, who, when she lost her parents, vowed to keep their memories alive and encourages others to document and honor their ancestors with preserving experiences and heritage. I sit down with her to discuss how this movement can be healing for generations to come.
We make history every day, and we have to hold on to that for ourselves.
And Charity Howard is hanging out on Philly's Avenue of the Arts.
We are inducting the new class of Walk of Fame honorees.
All that's coming up on Bridging Philly. There are many ways to learn history. It doesn't have to be in a classroom or in a traditional museum. You don't have to sit in a library and delve into historical archives. All of those things are great, of course, but experiencing history is also a great way to not only learn about events and people who came before you, but to truly feel what things were like, with up-close and personal accounts of movements, achievements, failures, and successes. Monica O. Montgomery is founder and president of the Diaspora DNA Story Center. It is her mission to honor her ancestors, our ancestors, by keeping their stories alive. Monica, welcome to Bridging Philly.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
We are excited to have you here. We spoke a little bit. I met Monica virtually when we were talking about her experience with the Mission Slam, where people in the community doing work in the community would come forward and kind of just tell a story based on, you know, whether it's a personal experience or something that they experienced within the community, to kind of just bring the community work and the experiences to an audience, which I thought was a great idea. And we'll kind of be doing that here today. But before we get into everything, I want you to explain to everyone, and to me, of course, what exactly Diaspora DNA is.
Diaspora DNA Story Center is a cultural center, a new type of cultural center, elevating global majority stories and experiences and bringing what happens internationally from the places we're connected to hyper-locally here to Philadelphia. We consider ourselves a cultural center because people can engage with art, with history, with genealogy and kinkeeping, as well as learn about all of the dynamic festivals that happen in the city of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a festivals capital. Mm. Happy to share more about that later. But we create tours, talks, curriculum experiences, highlighting festivals as the ultimate expression of many diasporas.
And when you say global majority, you're referring to?
Black, brown, Asian, Indian, Native American, people of color all over the world. That is the terminology we use.
Understand. So I understand just from learning your story that the Diaspora DNA Story Center was born out of grief.
Yeah.
As you lost your parents a few years ago. Can you talk about that and how that led you to form Diaspora DNA?
Sure. So I'm from a relatively small family. It was just me, my mom, and my dad growing up in New York. I do have extended family in other states, but everyone's kind of scattered. And my parents just meant the world to me. They had such a profound impact on my life, and they shaped who I have become. Mm. My dad, Dr. Elvin Montgomery Jr., he was a Black history scholar. He wrote a book 25 years ago called Collecting African American History, which was the preeminent text of its time, teaching people how they can become collectors, how they can become archivists, how they should preserve their items and not just throw them away if someone passes away or if you move houses. We make history every day, and we have to hold on to that for ourselves. He also was an appraiser of estates. We got to appraise Rosa Parks' estate, the Rosa Parks,
wow.
And look at all her dresses, her awards. We did that work for the Smithsonian. He worked with many different archives, libraries, museums, appraising things that were donated. And he also was a genealogist. He traced our family back to the late 1700s. So all of this, right? And then my mom was an amazing artist, educator, a woman of great faith. And ultimately, they shaped me in some interesting ways. I always would tell friends of mine, you know, they'd be like, what are you doing on the weekend? I'm like, oh, my parents have homework for me. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, they have an extra set of curriculum at home, the work I have to do at home before I get back to school. They were that kind of parents. Mm-hmm. You grew up with educators. My dad was also a psychologist. So there's just so much to it. So yeah. They had high hopes. They realized those hopes, and they made me to be someone that operates with a spirit of excellence, of integrity, and to be mindful of how I have to be a cultural steward. Mm. So with all of this, I decided that as they passed away due to complications with Alzheimer's and dementia, as they forgot so much of everything, their own identities. My mother at one point was not able to speak. My father was not able to breathe. He had to be intubated. Mm. To see that kind of degeneration from cognitive impairments, it broke my heart. But I knew who they were and what they stood for. And I wanted to make sure that even if they forgot, that they would not be forgotten, and what they stood for, their legacy of art, history, culture, education, community would last forever. And that's what inspired Diaspora DNA.
Wow. It seems as though the work that you're doing is kind of healing for you, because that kind of grief doesn't really go away.
No, it doesn't. Grief is something that is an energy. Sometimes you have to transmute it, alchemize it, to use a fun term. You know, thinking of the sadness that you feel, it never really leaves. Sometimes it might actively sting. Sometimes it might be more of a passive feeling. But how can that grief become something that expresses, that you process through it, or you get it off of you in some ways? And so for me, I couldn't just sit in the grief. I didn't want to spiral downward and just become like a puddle of tears. Yeah. I wanted to do something. I feel like the greats, right? When we think of history, a lot of things have been founded in honor of other people, whether that's, you know, parents or children or partners. Things are inspiring, right? Mm-hmm. In honor of others. And I knew that was the best way to honor my ancestors. I knew they would like that. They raised me going to museums. So what better way than to found an unmuseum for them?
An unmuseum. I like that.
Yeah.
So you actually delved into your own history, the history of your parents, and you uncovered things that you didn't know about them as you were growing up. What were some of the things that you discovered about your parents?
I did. Well, after both of their funerals, when I was processing through their papers, because again, my dad taught me never throw anything out, right? We make history every day. I was like, oh, let's see what's in their personal effects, you know, and things that I didn't know and see. I discovered that my father was quite the student activist back in his day. He went to Harvard University in the early 60s, 1964, I believe. And that was a time of great upheaval around the civil rights movement, championing for, you know, human rights for African Americans. And he started a kind of activist protest and movement on campus to get an African American studies major instituted as part of the curriculum at Harvard. At that time, that didn't exist.
Wow.
And he, along with other students, fought for that, did sit-ins, protested for that, and ultimately were able to get the department to create the African American Studies major that then went on to found the Hutchins Center, where Dr. Henry Louis Gates currently leads. So that is directly an impact of his work and his legacy. And he later on received a W.E.B. Du Bois Medal from Harvard University in honor of that work, right?
Look, that is spectacular.
The more you know. And then I found out, like, my mom, back in her younger years, she, like, used to ride motorcycles,
what?
Like, daredevil style. It's like, what is life? She was so conservative growing up with me, but she was out there, and to the point that she got into a crash. She was riding with my aunt's boyfriend, and they were, like, I guess, popping around the block and, like, crashed into the basement of someone's house and had all these, like, you know, medical things. And then that's when she, I guess, put the bike down, put the helmet down.
Yeah.
But I would have never known this if I hadn't gone through their papers, their letters, their personal effects, to discover more about the human side of my parents.
Look at that. It's funny. We tend to not even think about the fact that our parents had lives before we were born.
Before they were parents.
Right? Before they were parents, they
had
lives.
And even through.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So that just must have been so wonderful to discover all of that. But you didn't just stop at the archives and things that you were digging into. You also spoke with people who knew them to even learn more about them, right?
Yes. I still make a practice of trying to speak monthly to someone that knew my parents in their lifetime. I just spoke with a gentleman about my father. My father was on the board of the Appraisers Association of America, so like the kind of national body that governs appraisers and appraisals. And he was speaking about how he's a Jewish gentleman and how he took my dad to his temple one day for like a religious service. And my dad was like, yeah, I'll go. I'll try it. And then he was like, yeah, because at that time your dad was practicing Buddhism. And I'm like, wow, like all the random things. And he was just saying how like my dad believed in religious tolerance and just understanding culture, understanding different worldviews and perspectives and how that was very impressive to him at the time in the early 80s. Wow. So just so many new levels unlocked of learning about their lives and how that has inadvertently shaped me.
Wow. And did you kind of discover some puzzle pieces that were missing before? And then you say, oh, you know what? That makes sense. Now I know why he's like that. Now I know why he said things of that nature.
I think I realized more about them. My dad had this saying, and he would always say, nothing is real until it's written, right? And that's why he committed so much of his time and energy to writing. He wrote books, he wrote articles, he wrote papers for people. He, you know, is a doctor. He wrote a dissertation. He did dissertation coaching for others. And he was always obsessed with writing. I remember when I was like 1 and a half, he was like holding my little hands around a pen and trying to teach me writing strokes way before other kids were doing it. And I'm like, you know, I'm looking back like, what is this? Why do I have to write like as soon as I'm born? But that's his, that was his way of preparing me for this world. And to this day, I feel so comfortable with the pen, right? The pen is mightier than the sword. I feel comfortable writing. After everything that happened when my parents passed away, I started writing this vision of Diaspora DNA and what it would be, what it would do, how it would honor them, how it could honor all of our ancestors. And now because I've written it, it has become real. So that advice, that axiom for living has really manifested all through my life and his.
Now, of course, you're honoring your ancestors by doing what you're doing and starting this. Why is it important for all of us to kind of pay homage and honor our ancestors in this way?
It is extremely important. You know, everyone has someone that they loved or love that they may have lost, and certainly someone who they look up to and admire. And what is it if we go through life actively realizing that we can use people as role models and inspirations, and even when they're gone, that role modeling, that inspiration can continue? And one of the best things you could do to honor your ancestors is to speak about them, right? Is to do things in their name, is to mention them in rooms, is to talk about how you were raised or how you were shaped and formed, is to actively bring their life and their wisdom into your current daily walk. And so that's why I say my parents' names at all times and I say the things they taught me, because that keeps them burning in my heart, that keeps them alive for me. Everyone may have someone like that, but sometimes people feel that after someone has passed away, you know, they can no longer be spoken of or it would be too painful to speak of them. And sometimes it is painful, but it's also tremendously healing. Mm. It's tremendously cathartic to say the names and think of the memories and look at the old photos, and to the capacity that you can, that you have the emotional bandwidth to delve into a memory lane experience, to do that every so often so that you keep that person with you. So that's something we advocate for everyone. We have a workshop we do called Eternal Threads, which talks about how to honor your ancestors digitally, as well as through old-fashioned writing, analog, and what you can do to kind of create your own archive of family memories. And those are the sorts of experiences that we curate at Diaspora DNA.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly. Connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Now, there's always a challenge when it comes to gathering historical information and, you know, kind of preserving it. But you were a museum curator, so I'm assuming this kind of came a little, I guess, easier for you.
It did. It did. I've been working in museums for the last 20 years. I've been fortunate enough to curate at the Smithsonian, the Brooklyn Museum, Portland Art Museum, South African Embassy, many different spaces, as well as some locally here in Philadelphia. And I've always just loved the work of culture. To me, curating is not so much the kind of academic pursuit of just putting something on the wall. It's how to tell a story in dynamic ways and how to make it come alive for people. And the thing that excites me most about curating is not the process of putting art or history or artifacts together. It's getting people in the room to see it. So I always would say I'm a curator of experiences that people want to come to, whether that's a panel or a talk or an exhibit or something else. I really want people to gather, to dwell, to ponder, to make meaning in those spaces. But I've really enjoyed my curatorial journey, and I'm still very active in museums. Mm-hmm. And I still think that museums as kind of a launch pad has shaped where I am today and what I'm working on.
Okay. Now, of course, this Diaspora DNA Center, you don't have to go to the center just to experience it. You bring the experience to people, whether it's a bus tour or it's a pop-up. Tell me about those different experiences that you've put together in programs where you bring the experiences to people.
Sure. So realizing that, number one, our space is small but mighty, but, you know, we can't fit probably more than 30 people there. But that there's a lot of people in the city that are looking for high-quality arts, culture, creative experiences. We design a lot of mobile activations to come to where the people are in that spirit of community. We do a lot of tabling and exhibiting at different fairs, festivals, resource exchanges. We have an experience called Archives and Vibes, where we bring some of the archives that we hold. These are the books and the papers, the ephemera passed on to me from my father that look at Black history, world cultures, mental health resources. We bring that to the people. We have a book club experience. We pair that with a creative workshop, whether that's a paint and sip or sketch club or dance movement, and really get it people really engaging around literacy, books, and what they hold. So that's one experience. We also have a junior archivist camp we do with children in middle school and high school. If you'd like us to bring items to your educational space, we're excited to do that. We have a curriculum we've built. But most excitingly, with the work I do around festivals, I'm someone that's really been studying and doing a cultural mapping of festivals all around the city. Hmm. So far, we have counted and mapped 350 festivals that happen in the city of Philadelphia.
Okay, wow.
And we're in process of sharing this information with Visit Philly. But we're always on the lookout for festivals. So we have created this citywide bus tour, a joyride, if you will, taking people to where festivals happen, when festivals are happening, to feel the sights, the sounds, the food, the performance, and enjoy the culture that is oftentimes overlooked all throughout the city. So that's another experience, Save Philly Festivals bus tour that is happening all through the summer and fall.
And of course, Philadelphia is the perfect place for this, honestly, with all of the culture that is offered here and all of the cultural festivals that are here. So I can see how Philly is the perfect place for this. But to delve into history and honor our ancestors, we have to be curious. And I'm just wondering, just to kind of look on the other side of things, as everyone has this little black box in their hand and the kids are growing up with the tablets and things of that nature, is that curiosity still there? And how important is it that we teach our children to continue to be curious? It's okay to be on these tablets and, you know, talk to Alexa or whatever. But how about delving into your own history and talking to your parents and your grandparents while we still have them here? So kids remain curious.
Agree. I think everyone is curious, but sometimes in this modern moment, people are used to instant gratification, right?
Yes.
You can go on Google, you can use your AI, right, and type something in and get the immediate answer. Mm-hmm. The spirit of discovery and research has sometimes been lost in this modern moment, and there's something unfortunate about that. We want to encourage people to get curious and get in the spirit of looking into things by observation, by seeking out the material culture, by seeking out the answers inside of a text, by trying to figure something out without the quick hit of, oh, I'm just going to ask this automatic, you know, artificial intelligence. So, for instance, when we did our junior archivist camp, we were at a middle school in Germantown. And in honor of the new exhibition curated by my friend Dr. Paul Farber of Monument Lab, it's called Rising Up, and it's all about like Rocky and the culture of boxing. It's at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. We bought a selection of sports memorabilia. We bought VHS tapes. Remember those?
I certainly do.
We bought magazines, baseball cards, all sorts of things. And we showed it to the kids and we said, you know, what's this stuff? We put it on the table, like show and tell. This is safe to touch. And they were like, oh, I've seen some of these. I'm not sure some of these. So we held up the VHS tapes, which were Muhammad Ali, you know, like master copy of his whole life. And it was like an 8-tape set of all the things that he did. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's this? Who is this? And they didn't know. I'm like, does this face look familiar? Have you ever heard the term Ali? And they're like, I think so. I'm like, he was a famous boxer and an activist and a philanthropist. He did these things. And how would you access this? And we're like, I don't know what that is. And I'm like, this is a VHS. This is the way people used to watch movies. They were like, what? Like, do you stream that? And they were like trying to find a button on it. They were trying to see, like, is it a touchscreen? I'm like, this is a physical media. And then I actually bought a VHS player, video player, and I held that up. I'm like, no, who knows what this is? Or like, what are these old clunky things? Yeah. They were trying to touch it, scroll on it. I'm like, this is a plastic device that you would play the VHS on. And so they were trying to understand what came before them. And by just discovery of objects, talking to one another, asking us questions, it gave them the ultimate lesson. It illuminated what was beyond the quick hit of instant gratification. And that's the kind of experiences that we bring.
What is your reaction to voices that are out there that are saying, you know, this isn't important? Why are we highlighting these experiences and these people? There's really no need for that. You're putting yourself in a separate box, and that's not something that we should be doing. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think that anyone who doesn't see the importance of history, whether it's your own personal family history or world history or history of different diasporas, is incredibly short-sighted, and it's missing the fact that if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, as well as true knowledge and understanding comes from realizing what has happened across time, right? And so if you want to understand more about something, there's not just new knowledge, there's knowledge to be built upon things that haven't been digitized yet. There are antiquarian books and items that still haven't made it into Google, into AI. Right. And that knowledge is just as solid, just as sound, has just as much importance as whatever might be able to be quickly accessed. So there is a case for history, for heritage, for leaning into discovery, and for not assuming that we are know-it-alls. And in this moment, everything is at our fingertips, and that's all we need to know.
What are some challenges that you can foresee in the future in the cultural sector when it comes to representing diasporic histories?
I think part of the challenge is that people have become so worried about offense or maybe uncomfortable with asking questions about other people's cultures that they're not willing to have those conversations. So they're kind of self-censoring. There is a lot of encouragement in the current moment of, like, you know, not, I don't know, just like an anti-multiculturalism.
Yes.
That is tremendously unfortunate. Multiculturalism is like an 80s term, but I still use it. I still love it. I want people to understand and learn about each other's cultures, customs, special diversity, and how that makes us all better and richer. So to come out of self-censoring, to come out of being too cautious or too shy, or just being comfortable not knowing, like, we have to get curious.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do that in real time, face to face, if possible, with one another, so that we can all be better for it.
Is this spiritual for you, the work that you're doing?
I feel that the work I'm doing is my life's purpose. I am a person of faith, and faith is a part of it. But for me, it's like I can't imagine doing anything else that is more meaningful than this. I've built museums, I've curated spaces, I've led cultural organizations. I used to be a professor. I've done all these things for other places.
Mm-hmm.
And what better time than to do it in honor of my own family and in honor of all of our diasporas. So it's very purpose-driven.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned you were a professor. You were actually a U of Arts professor. And ironically enough, you found space in the shuttered building for your new center.
Yeah, well, we did an activation with them. It was a temporary activation last summer. But as they opened as VIA, the Village of Industry Arts, I'm messing it up, Village of Industry and Arts, they used to be Hamilton Hall, now they're VIA. They wanted to do something commemorative, spiritual, if you will, to honor all the people that felt aggrieved that the university closed unceremoniously, the students, the staff, the alumni, and other stakeholders and partners. So they did what they called a celebration of life. They invited everyone to come back, to be there over a 5-day span, engage with arts and culture, share your feelings, write it on Post-its, and they took all of the items in the UArts archive, everything that was left in the building, and gave them away. So people in the UArts community could get a piece of that history in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
We were invited to be a program partner as part of this. We facilitated a day-long art therapeutic experience with movement, with kind of sketching and painting. We also had a tea ceremony there. And ultimately, we brought some of our text and books out that related to artist and art history for people to enjoy. And all of that was full circle as someone who used to be in the building recruiting new students, meeting with the current students, now is able to come back and help close out that chapter.
What is it that you want most people to come away with when they experience what you have to offer, whether it's at the pop-up or at the bus tour or a speaking engagement? What do you want people to come away with?
I want people to feel a tremendous pride of place, that they are proud to be a Philadelphian or proud to be where they're from, adjacent to Philadelphia, that is discovering something new about their city, about the history and the culture around it. I want people to feel inspired and more curious than before. That they would go independently, keep researching, looking things up, sharing the knowledge they've gained. And most of all, I want them to realize that we're making history every day, right? And that they are going to preserve the legacies and archive the items that are part of their histories for future generations.
Monica, what do you think your parents would think of the work that you are doing now?
They would be really proud.
Yeah.
They would be incredibly proud and incredulous that I've been able to pull this off with a dedicated team. But like in this day and age, when so much arts, culture, education is being underfunded and cut, they'd be like, are you crazy? Like, seriously? But great job, daughter. I think they would feel really good about it.
Awesome. And how can people learn more about the work of Diaspora DNA Center?
Certainly. You can visit us online at www.diasporadna.org. And you can learn more about our Save Philly Festivals tours and curriculum at savephillyfestivals.com.
Okay. Monica O. Montgomery, founder and president of the Diaspora DNA Story Center, thank you so much for sharing. We so appreciate it, and we love the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Come visit us at Cherry Street Pier anytime.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
This week on Shara in the City, Shara Day Howard is on Philadelphia's Avenue of the Arts as the Philadelphia Music Alliance celebrates their 2026 Walk of Fame inductees.
This week on Shara in the City, we're hitting up Philly's Walk of Fame right off of Broad and Spruce Streets outside of the Kimmel Center. And we're going to pay tribute to some of Philly's most honored music legends.
But first, we're going to chat it up with Kerry Park Lennon, the executive director of the Philadelphia Music Alliance. You know, we got to keep things official. All right, so what's going on today?
So today we are very excited. We are inducting the new class of Walk of Fame honorees for the Philadelphia Music Alliance Walk of Fame out here outside of the Kimmel Center on Broad Street. And we will unveil their plaques for the first time.
Fantastic. All right, so give us a couple.
You know, we're thrilled about them all. And they're all stars in our eyes. We're giving a Lifetime Achievement Award to Earl Young, a legendary drummer of the Tramps, who will be here tonight. And we have Pablo Batista, we have Adam Blackstone, we have Lady B, we have Reverend Louise Williams Bishop, and of course we have Orchestra Music and Artistic Director Yannick Neguet-Segan and Sun Ra Orchestra, as well as the Philadelphia Boys Choir and Chorale. We'll get remarks from Council President Johnson, as well as Philadelphia Music Alliance Board Chair Alan Rubens. But then it's really about the artists getting to see their plaque for the first time. So they'll get to unveil their plaque with all of their fans and their family around them. But it's really a chance to celebrate. It's a party. We like to say it's music industry fancy.
Yeah, this is Philly star-studded.
It is. We are so thrilled to have all of the support. And we get to celebrate during Philly Music Month, first ever Philly Music Month. So honoring the past is essential to our mission, but we realize that it's equally, if not more important, to be supporting the future. So drawing the bridge between the two is really the most important.
Which brings me to my buddy, Christopher Michael Stevens. He was the artist in resident at Community College. He's done so much already, but he really is an example of what the future of Philly music looks like. Let's go find him.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Hey, this is Christopher Michael Stevens.
Right, Walk of Fame. Everybody's famous today.
Yeah, today especially, right?
Right, keep that fire lit. And let's talk about the fact that you yourself have so much in front and behind. You've done a lot. I mean, John Legend much?
I've worked with John Legend, Chrisette Michelle, Kelly Price, recorded with Diana Ross. Came up making music with Ty Tripp and GA.
Wow, so long list, man. And you just got off tour with John Legend.
Yeah, we just did his 20th anniversary of his Get Lifted album. So that was awesome.
Yeah, so at this point, looking around, you know, what are you thinking about the future of Philly music?
Oh, it is on and popping. There's so much great young talent, but there's still a lot of legacy talent here that is still making great music. So it's not going anywhere but up from here.
Talking about ascension going up from here. And then we ran into the man of the hour, the Tower of Power, Earl Young. He's actually getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. Amazing.
Hi, this is the Tramp, the Burn Baby Burn, the Disco Inferno. I am so excited today. I'm getting the award. I mean, this award means so much to me. It's a Lifetime Achievement Award. I am 86, but I'm still Burn Baby Burn. My Tramps is here. A lot of the original guys are gone now, but the guys here have been with me for a long time. Johnny King, Evelyn King's brother, and Antoine Young. And we have the crowd from Florida. Yay! They flew all the way, but I want you to meet the guys in the Tramps.
Oh, I love it. Johnny. Come here, Johnny.
Hello there. Hi, how are you?
Fantastic. All right, so what is it like to live with the legend?
Oh, my gosh. First of all, let me just tell you, as a drummer, I'm a drummer. So right there, like it's like a match made in heaven.
Beat by beat.
And I actually was at the studio at Sigma Sound when Earl was recording the Destiny album, and I met Michael Jackson that night. So I think it's kind of odd and prophetic that like 40 some odd years later, I'm working, you know, with him and performing with him, and it's kind of surreal. Like I don't lose any arguments of knowing like one of the greatest musicians that ever, like graced record.
And sir,
Antoine Young. I've been with Earl 41 years now.
Whoa. Amazing.
He allowed me to live my dream. I always wanted to be a singer. Here I am.
So today he gets his flowers. What does this mean?
Too much, but it's well deserved. Earl came from, he got his own story to tell, but he came from a long way, and it's well-deserved,
I mean, Philadelphia is my home, you know, and one thing I feel proud about with this award, and I want the young people in this city to know that they can make it. I mean, I came up on the streets with no mother and father, raising three foster homes, and quit school in the sixth grade. But I was determined that I was gonna turn my life around and be somebody. And you can achieve anything in this world you want to if you believe in the Almighty and believe in yourself.
And you're a fabulous example of that.
I'm here at 86 years old.
Looking good.
And I've never been in trouble. I've never been in a
good
hospital
trouble
in my life. My health is good, and I'm still Burn Baby Burn, that Disco Inferno. Thank you very much for hanging out with Lady and the Tram. You know,
and Burn, I'll take
Baby
it.
Burn and Philadelphia's finest. You are a fine lady.
I'm going to turn up the volume on that. All right, so the red carpet has been laid out. Everyone's standing, waiting. Everybody's going to be lined up. This is pretty amazing. Everybody's here. You can hear, of course, the streeting out here. Philly always has something going on. Hey, Boomy, what's up? We got Oshun Boomy Fernandez West, the Odunde organizer, CEO. Big deal.
Is that my girl right there? We're celebrating Lady B. You hear me? All the other awardees, but baby, Lady B, my sister, and she is so deserving of this honor, and I'm happy for her. And I'm happy to be here to celebrate with her.
Oh, long legacy. I mean, in long legs. This girl's been walking the walk for so long.
I think over 50 years in radio. The first woman to play hip hop on the mainstream on radio.
Girl, singing.
I mean, she a trailblazer.
You know, she deserves to have her flowers while she can still smell them.
She getting them.
My name is Kim. I'm Lady B's niece. I just want to say this is so well-deserving. She's such a good person outside of Lady B, you know, with her family, and she loves all her fans, and this is just so deserving. So we're out here to celebrate her today. With her hip surgery she just had, we're going to wheel her in, and we're going to celebrate her today.
Oh, I love it. Family all around.
Yes.
My name is Mimi Brown. Lady B is not only a sister, but a great impact on what the hip-hop culture is all about. And when it comes to women, she was the first woman to ever have a rap record. I was the first woman to ever vouch for her, and I think she was 16 years old when Dr. Perry Johnson took me to see her, and he said, what do you think? And because I would like to get her a record deal, and I said, do it. And that's what
Then it was like rapid fire, ran into Pablo Batista, then also Marshall Allen. He's 102, still conducting Sun Ra in the orchestra. It was truly an experience of a lifetime.
My name is Pablo Batista, international percussionist.
It means the world because I've been working with a lot of these people for decades, and there's a lot of love in the room, a lot of great recordings and experiences and tours and gigs. And so I'm super excited and proud. I'm overwhelmed.
Full circle. Sun Ra! So what does it mean to you today to be here?
Oh, it's a wonderful feeling that started or trying to wake the people up to the space age.
I love it.
Oh, wonderful. That is Noel Scott.
How you doing, sir?
Greetings.
This is a moment that no one can take away.
It's a moment for Sun Ra, who invested so much in us, invested so much in Germantown. He had such a vision for our people and for the community and for the world at large. And this is just part of the completion of his mission, which is for his message to really get to everyone. We appreciate it. On behalf of Sun Ra, we thank you back.
Right now, so the ceremony is starting. You can hear the street buzzing, the subway underfoot, and of course, all these people came out to pay their respects to the legends of Philly music.
Welcome to the 2026 Walk of Fame Induction. Yes, yes, that's what's up. That's what's up on this beautiful day.
It was a wonderful ceremony. Everybody got their plaques, we got our pictures, but most of all, our Philly legends and music got their flowers.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.